Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, November 23rd. Thanks for joining us. I'm Trudy Palmer.
And I'm Clay Collins.
Inviting a friend or coworker to the family Thanksgiving dinner is nothing new. You may even have heard about Wanda Dench, who, 6 years ago, mistakenly texted a Thanksgiving invitation to Jamal Hinton, a perfect stranger. They quickly figured out the error, but she made good on the invitation, and he accepted. The two, usually with family from both sides, have spent Thanksgiving together ever since, and even have occasional get-togethers in between. That's truly lovely. But it's different than Friendsgiving. According to Merriam-Webster, the word Friendsgiving first appeared around 2007, finally making it into the dictionary in 2020. In the intervening years, businesses sought a piece of the pie, pun intended, from Taco Bell's Friendsgiving feast to Betty Crocker's menu recommendations. But the Friendsgiving my 20-something friend Sir Colum celebrates each year has nothing to do with promoting a brand. It's also less ingrained in the colonial stigma than the traditional holiday, she says. Instead, it's about being grateful for your friend group, she explains. On the one hand, you're gathering with friends before they take off for the holiday. On the other, you're making sure those with no place to go still get a Thanksgiving-like experience, she adds. I love that spirit of looking out for one another and embracing others. When she arrived at her Friendsgiving feast last Sunday, Sir Colum knew only a few of the people there. Not so by the end of the night. The magic of Friendsgiving, she says, is coming to the table and introducing yourself. Now, today's stories. Our first story. The acquittal of teenager Kyle Rittenhouse highlights twin trends, the rise of armed protest and the strength of self-defense as a legal argument. And there's nuance as these trends span racial lines.
The Reverend Jonathan Barker, a pastor in Kenosha, Wisconsin, has noticed more people carrying guns at protests. Everybody's armed up, he says. Worries about that were evident on Sunday at a protest there in response to Kyle Rittenhouse's acquittal for killing two men and injuring another during social unrest in Kenosha last year. At the weekend protest, a leader introduced a new set of hand signals to guide protesters: go, stop, and hit the ground. Studies have found that the presence of firearms makes violence at protests more likely. Given that, history suggests armed Black protesters should be especially concerned. Homicides with a white perpetrator and a Black victim are 10 times more likely to be ruled justified than cases with a Black perpetrator and a white victim, the Urban Institute found. But changing protest dynamics could push the country toward not only more armed protests, but also new views of self-defense. A few recent verdicts suggest that Black defendants are winning self-defense claims that historically would have turned against them. Meanwhile, some Black Americans are exercising constitutional rights that not long ago seemed out of reach. In Kenosha this weekend, a Black father-daughter duo carrying military-style rifles provided security for social justice protesters. This story was reported by Patrick Johnson and Dick Mertens in Kenosha, Wisconsin, for The Monitor.
Russia's troop buildup on Ukraine's border has many in the West worried about invasion. But what's really going on appears not to be about war, but about differing views and goals for NATO.
The current Russian buildup of 100,000 troops and heavy equipment near Ukraine has raised the fears of some in Kiev and Washington that a Russian invasion is imminent. But analysts say that war is not Russia's goal. Such a conflict would be prohibitively costly and intensely unpopular in Russia, which is home to the world's biggest Ukrainian diaspora. Rather, the buildup is meant to back up Russian President Vladimir Putin's demands for permanent guarantees that countries like Ukraine and other former Soviet states will not join NATO and will remain neutral. Though Ukraine's NATO application has been temporarily shelved, the alliance has consistently maintained that Ukraine will eventually join. For Moscow, the prospect of NATO forces only a 3-day march away was never going to be acceptable. Western leaders have believed for decades that every country has the right to join NATO, says Fyodor Lukianov, editor of Russia in Global Affairs. It's an ideological belief, not one based on serious strategic or military calculations, but Russia is back. It is deeply concerned about its strategic neighborhood, and it needs to make clear that Ukraine must not join NATO. Putin's point is that we need Western leaders to take that seriously. This story was reported by Fred Weir in Moscow for The Monitor.
Holiday air travel can always be a test of patience. That's taking on new meaning this year as unprecedented, unruly passenger behavior coincides with a rebound in the number of travelers.
Long-distance trips to Grandma's house for Thanksgiving may look a little easier as some pandemic restrictions have eased since last fall. Air travel, which dropped off in 2020, is set to double over last year, with approximately 4.2 million travelers expected to fly over the holiday, according to AAA. But airline attendants are bracing themselves against unprecedented passenger disruptions, largely spurred by mask mandates. The Federal Aviation Administration has opened 991 investigations related to unruly flyers so far this year, more than three times as many as in any year since 1995, the earliest data available. It's important to note that the vast majority of flyers behave. For example, during the week ending November 7, for every 10,000 flights, only 5.6 incidents of unruly passengers were reported. And the FAA and industry leaders have stepped up enforcement against unruly behavior. Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, encourages having more patience for fellow passengers and flight crew. "Think about being a helper," she says. "It's very helpful when you create that spirit of kindness." This story was reported by Tomas Gonzalez for The Monitor.
London's Brick Lane embodies immigrant resilience. Now, the Bangladeshi community that has called Bangletown home for decades fights a new foe in the form of gentrification and hipsterfication.
London's Brick Lane, known colloquially as Bangletown since curry houses here boomed in the 1990s and drew visitors from around the globe, embodies Britain's immigration story. Bangladeshis fleeing civil war at home settled into the area's red brick housing, following the path of earlier immigrants. Life was difficult and racism was a constant challenge, but they created a home that many remember lovingly. One elected councillor recalls his childhood in Brick Lane. "There was genuine love here in the East End of London," he says. "It was the best time of my life." Now, Brick Lane finds itself under threat again, this time from gentrification. But the community is leaning in on a history of adaptation and coexistence with protest, art, and public gatherings. "There's something in the air, a weirdly poetic air," says Sabina Begum, a British-born Bangladeshi whose father grew up in the area during the 1970s. "I'm transported back to Bangladesh. Small fragments of Bangladesh live there. It's completely different to other places." This story was reported by Shafi Musaddiq in London for The Monitor.
Encanto takes place in a pre-computer era Colombia. But as Monitor chief culture writer Stephen Humphreys notes, the story about comparing oneself to others seems tailored for today's social media-minded teens. You can find the full film review in today's issue. Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on reform in Ukraine. Since July, when President Vladimir Putin rejected the idea that Ukraine is a sovereign country, Russia has amassed some 100,000 troops on the border with its weaker neighbor. The implied threat of an invasion has ignited concerns in Western capitals about how to defend a nation seeking to join the West. Yet something else has been afoot since July, something that could be Ukraine's best defense. Its elected leaders have rushed to approve or implement anti-corruption measures to meet the demands of both international lenders and its citizens. On Tuesday, Ukraine's struggle to reform its corrupt ways paid off, literally. The International Monetary Fund sent nearly $700 million to Ukraine as a result of the country's progress toward cleaning up its courts, improving the independence of the central bank and anti-corruption bodies, and curbing the influence of business tycoons. The money, part of a larger $5 billion package agreed to in early 2020, had been delayed for about a year because of relative inaction by President Vladimir Zelensky and his ruling Servant of the People party. When a sovereign nation arms itself with rule of law and democratic equality, war with a threatening neighbor can be won long before it starts. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. That's it for today's issue. Join us tomorrow for a feast of articles on Thanksgiving and giving thanks. From feeding thousands a memorable meal to a centenarian's boundless gratitude. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how genuine gratitude for God's love and goodness opens our hearts to the divine inspiration that brings healing and solutions. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton, Tim Malone, and Tara Adhikari.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.